Human decency is not derived from religion, it precedes it.
The religion of one age is the literary entertainment of the next.
The God of the Old Testament is arguably the most unpleasant character in all fiction.
Exceptional claims demand exceptional evidence.
Welcome to the podcast of Leaders in Free Thought. This is where Seth and I get together and discuss issues of importance to atheists, skeptics, free thinkers, and others who base their lives around reason. We bring you news, interviews, and thoughtful discussion on topics of importance to people in the free thought community.
I'm Seth.
And I'm Jeff, and you're listening to the Leaders in Free Thought.
So here we have a little bonus content for you. I've been calling this the diversity episode. We had a panel at Skepticamp that was discussing diversity and skepticism, I guess. And it's a topic that really, before this, I don't really think I really gave a shit about. I didn't really think about it at all. I didn't think about the lack of minorities, the fact that the skepticism community is mostly made up of white men.
It's an easy thing to miss living where we live, right? We're in Fort Collins, Colorado, for those of you guys who don't know. And our town is primarily white. It's primarily, I would say, young adult with a college in town, right?
Yeah. So we've got, it's a college town, and then the individuals who aren't here for college specifically, it seems mostly, you know, like upper class, a little more affluent whiteness still at the same time.
It's that it sort of jives with the predominance in skepticism, right? So it's one of those things that I definitely didn't notice when I first started showing up at skeptical events. I noticed the lack of women almost immediately. Seth is married, so it didn't occur to him quite as readily as it did to me. But you see that coming when you're spending Saturday nights at Skeptics in the pub with 15 guys and 3 women.
So, certainly.
But I digress. Anyways, we got a chance to watch this panel, and then we got a chance to do a few interviews with a few people afterwards, which was a lot of fun. We got a lot of interesting stuff out of it.
Yeah. So here's a little clip of the diversity panel we have for you.
Go ahead and end this question back here.
I just wanted to point out that I've been attending skeptic events for about since 2000. And so, what is that, 10 years? Something like that. In this room, we have 61 people. And 1/3 of women. So we've got 20 women, 41 men. So that's about 1/3. And I started going to skeptical events. I started going to CFI skeptical events. And that was probably 10% women. So we've made an incredible improvement in that area. Now, if you look at the James Randi Foundation, the JREF Foundation, they're pretty close to 35% women. So, you know, there's a lot of room still to improve for the women. As you said, what is it that women, what are we doing wrong that we're not including the women? Well, I've never really felt any, discrimination as a woman, not at all. But what I'd like to see, and this is something I've had this talk with Randy maybe 4 times, we need more color. We need more people of color. That is what we need. Women, we're coming along, but we need a lot more diversity as far as color. And we have people who are, they're really starting to outreach more in the African-American groups and other areas, but I think I'm encouraged because these numbers look really good, at least for women, and we're at least talking about it, and we're having a panel to discuss diversity. I think things are improving, but come on, we've got to hook it up a notch now. Come on.
Okay, to be fair, though, I want to say that earlier, if the onus was put on the men of skepticism to somehow make it friendlier or nicer or cuter and fluffier, more finger puppets.
Hey, that's you.
Okay, no.
That's you.
I believe the onus is on women.
Yes.
And people of color. Yay. And individuals, wherever you're coming from, whatever label you want to have, whatever perspective you come, to see the value in critical thinking, to see that as the central thought of skepticism. And you know, the skeptical movement as a PR mechanism has only just begun. I mean, we have Christopher Hitchens and Richard Dawkins representing a certain face of skepticism, but they're not the only face of skepticism. And critical thinking and skeptical inquiry is something that we as human beings, whatever society we live in, have access to. And there may be a lot of different barriers to that, but the onus is always on the individual to make that important and do something about it. They may not show up in this room. They may be busy out doing something twice as skeptical as any one of us in this room is doing right now. So, you know, I don't know. 2 years ago, there weren't that many people in women in Denver. And it was pretty apparent to me at that time, in that event, that the face was not a face that included me. So I kept showing up because then it did include me.
To one of the comments she made about including African American people of color in general, see if I actually started, Debbie Goddard, the on-campus outreach director, has actually started a program to do just that, which we're still waiting to see results. She's, you know, busy. She's only one woman, but she is starting to do that, which I think is awesome. And this is, again, this is a topic that comes up all the time. What are we, not in the sense that we need to make it, make the skeptical movement anything different than what it is, but like, what is going on in our organizations, what is going on in the organization of events and so on that's keeping them from coming? It's not a matter of changing anything, but what's keeping them from coming? We need to change that aspect of it, that's all. That's all I meant by that.
One more thing to add to that. I kind of wonder if these diversity panels and things like that almost make it more awkward for women to show up, because all of a sudden it becomes a big deal that a woman is there rather than just being one of the community. I feel really weird being up here because I'm just a person, as it says on my name tag. We don't have to divide into
self-identified
men. Divide men, women, people of color, whatever. We have to learn how to be part of the community and get our message out into other, like, communities of people rather than thinking of them as the other groups of people.
All right, let's go ahead and move on to, you had a question, sir?
Yeah, so I can understand the skeptical community being concerned about things it might be doing that are excluding certain minorities and discouraging diversity on accident, to look at those and find out what they might be. But I'm wondering what your justification might be for actually actively encouraging diversity in reference to what you had mentioned Debbie Goddard was doing, and also in reference to what you had said about actually feeling awkward in having that diversity sort of pointed out, like, look at our diversity.
I think that the focus should not be so much on diversity as getting the word out. And the best way to get the word out is to get it into as many communities as possible, as many different cultures as possible. And so if we want to call that diversity and seeking out, you know, different people of color, you know, people of different faiths, that's fine. But really it's about getting the word out to get the community as big as possible.
And like with my school, whenever I tell people that I'm a skeptic, people, you know, usually look at me like, really? You're a close-minded, God-hating person?
Yes.
But from my understanding, not a lot of the general public know what exactly a skeptic is. They usually get confused with a cynic. And that's what I personally think we need to get out, what a skeptic actually is to the public.
That's Brian's job. He has the radio.
Awesome. So we're closing on the 5 minute mark, so I'm actually going to ask a question. This one's for the queermosexual.
Everyone's looking at me, that's weird.
How do you think skepticism has affected the GLBT community, or what is our face in that community?
It's hot. We're actually fairly well represented, believe it or not. In every conferences you go to, any gay person is just as likely to get laid as any one of you. Straight people. Really. And I think our representation is good. What I don't see us doing, and I've complained to the CFI about this on multiple occasions, we don't have a presence at Pride rallies. We don't have a presence really during any, say, Prop 8 issues. I mean, skeptics will, you guys will back us up, right?
Oh, yeah.
Right? But though we have a lot of support, and you're always like going, Prop 8's stupid, that's ridiculous, you know, and probably if you're in California voting against or whatever, we don't see a lot of either prominent organizations or anything else really stepping up to the plate in public. I'd like to see more of that happen in terms of the LGBT issue in general.
So in case you didn't notice, our esteemed co-host Jeff was also the moderator of that panel.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun trying to rein in the racial slurs. I'm just joking. Our panel was excellent. Yeah. I would hate to make it seem like I didn't love some of the responses and the way that was put together.
There was kind of a minor controversy with some of the wording used in that panel, but we'll get to that in a second. Right now, we have Joel Guttormson.
Incredibly interesting guy. A lot of fun to talk to. Extremely, extremely prominent anywhere he is with his sexuality. Very out, very unafraid, which is something that I can respect. Especially, I feel like the skeptical community, while we might not have as much sexual diversity as we would want, and I'm not 100% sure that that's the case, it's maybe just something I've seen from my limited experiences with the Fort Collins skeptics, I feel like it's a very accepting community, and I feel like Joel has found a lot of play within the community. I'd like to talk about the positions that gay people take within the skeptical community and the amount of play they get. No laughing.
So here's my short conversation with Joel. What would you have liked to discuss that you didn't get to discuss?
I really would have liked to, you know, get into the nuts and bolts. It came up a little bit, but really get into the nuts and bolts of how to reach out to people. We talked a lot about the fact that we had to do it and who wasn't there and, you know, whose fault is it? And those are all great conversations, but I really wanted to, you know, get an idea from a large group of people. What is it, or how do we do it? What are the methods by which we reach out to different groups? Because it was mentioned, I think, I forget who mentioned it, but it was someone on the panel that said, you know, we have to reach out to these different communities. Great. I'm glad you said that. How do we do it?
Yeah.
Because, you know, it has something to do with the skeptic message. Like, how does that get integrated into different communities? Some communities are more receptive, some are less. Those that are less, how do we make it more palatable instead of just saying, your religion's wrong? Which can work for some people. I do it all the time, do it on a nearly constant basis. That said, that's not always the best method. So how do we is it understanding where they're coming from? And I don't mean to, you know, typecast anybody or use stereotypes in a negative sense, but the general stereotype is that African Americans come from a Southern Baptist background. Where they're very enthusiastic about their religion and don't want it touched. Then you go to the Latino community, where it's stereotypically very Catholic. So how do we deal with that? There isn't just one way to hit everybody. I was hoping to get into how we get into each community. If anyone had any insights into that, I'd love to know, because that information is good to pass along to everybody.
Sure.
But that was the one big thing I wanted to get into that we never did.
I see some documentaries and some like TV spots here and there about people who are gay but who are still religious. It seems like they try so hard to be a part of that religious community and to be part of their church, to be accepted, to be integrated, and obviously not for all religions, obviously not for all denominations, but it seems largely that the church is very belligerent and hateful toward gays. And that would, if I was gay, I would just say, well, like, I mean, I just don't understand why these people don't just go like, well, fuck you. I'm out of this Mormon church. You know, like, I'm not giving any more money to you. I'm not going to tithe anymore. I'm not going to attend your services anymore. I'm not going to buy your stupid books. I'm not going to watch you on TV. Yeah. You know, I'm done. And I would think there'd be like this, at some point there'd be this mass exodus of gays into the skeptical atheist community, because we're completely accepting. I would, in my view.
This, you're right. This, and I mentioned that in the, or I think I mentioned that in the panel, that the skeptic community is so open and receptive. It's awesome. It's great. I have no complaints about that. But I think the question you're asking is, why do people stay in their religion if they're gay and religious? Mm-hmm. Why do they stay there? Part of it is that might be all they've known, or they actually believe it. There's two problems. They might be like, well, you know, the church doesn't really like me, but I, you know, God still loves everybody. This is the one big thing I always hear from religious gay people. You know, God loves you no matter what. It says it, you know, that's what it says. It's what, you know, it is taught. That's the main foundation. That's why I believe, whatever. Which is fine. They also rightfully point out that they aren't Jews, so they don't have to believe the stuff in the Old Testament. Problem with that is 10 Commandments. Won't go into it. But that's their argument. They say, well, you know, that stuff, that's not what Jesus was teaching. Jesus is about love and acceptance. And I could blather on, but I'm not going to. I don't need to hear their stuff. That's their general response to it, which is valid if they truly believe that stuff. And it seems easy to say from the outside, and same for me. Mm-hmm. I'm on your side. Like, mm-hmm. Why don't you just drop it? Yeah. They obviously don't like you. So I'm on your side. But from their perspective, it's many things. It's all they know. It's what their family is. Their family might accept them, so they might not have any reason to leave. In the sense that they're accepted in a part of their lives that matters most to them, where the church is important, but it's not important that everybody accept them. They get that, you know, people don't like homosexuals and the activity therein associated, whatever it happens to be. Unless we actually talk to one of them, we won't know. And that's what I was saying. We need a presence at these gay pride rallies to go, you see all these churches? That's great. But we're telling you you're awesome and you don't have to believe jack to be accepted by our community. You just need to be yourself. You know, if you're religious, fine. If you're not, cool. But we just need to get out there. We're a community that's accepting. You know, a lot of the time and we do this to ourselves, we're skeptics. We are that, but we're also a very accepting group of people. Very cool, very nice, very fun to hang out with. And if there's any doubts or anything you want to express, we're open to that. And it would be a space for them to do that. And that's why I want our presence there, because we're not. Go to Pride rallies as much as I can if I'm not at one of these conferences. Mm-hmm. Believe it or not, skeptic conferences take precedent, except for the one in June. I already have tickets to go to San Francisco, so I know, stereotype.
And now Jeff and I have a lengthy conversation with my wife, who's half black, as she will mention.
We got really lucky with this one because, as there are 10 black people in Fort Collins, we've been lucky enough that Seth is actually married to one of them. So we had direct access to her, and she decided to give us some of her time at the Wild Boar.
Here's my wife's take on diversity and skepticism. What are we staring at me for?
Your wife's scaring the crap out of me.
I love you.
She has this gaze. It's just too intense.
It's the...
Oh.
What's wrong?
Nothing. I'm just wondering.
It's 10:15. They usually don't kick us out until like 10:30 when they start closing.
Let's talk about diversity and skepticism, Babo.
Oh, diversity and skepticism. Turn your chair around.
Come on.
Come on.
Okay. So what am I doing?
Diversity and skepticism.
Yes. I'm an extremely diverse person.
So you're like half black and half woman and half gay and...
I'm not half woman, actually. I'm a full woman. I am half black. My mother is white. My father apparently was black. I am bisexual. I was raised in poverty. And
see, now, bisexual, as the child within me wants to know, can we expand upon... I'm just kidding.
Okay. and I am a huge skeptic and always have been.
We talked a little bit about last week how the skeptic movement, the atheism movement, is very monochrome. It's composed of primarily white men.
For the deaf members of the audience, Seth and I are white.
Yeah, I don't know about that. I think that popular figures right now that exist would kind of lend to that type of thought, but I don't know if that's exactly true. I think that skepticism has existed since humans have. I think that it exists with every single community. I just think that every single community has a certain degree of anonymity that exists within it, especially the black community and the Muslim community, and certain communities that have basically grown to show that they cannot exhibit anything that is other than what the norm is. The black community and the Muslim community in specific basically being that if you aren't...
You're drunk, aren't you?
Yes, I am. That if you aren't, in the black community, if you aren't Christian, if you aren't God-fearing, then you are an outlier. You are not accepted. And the same with the Muslim community. If you're gay, if you don't, accept Muhammad and everything they believe, it's the same thing. So I think that it's basically just that the white community and the Americans, especially Western civilization, has been so accepting of those outliers. I think that it's really easy to believe that it's prevalent in that community. But I don't think that it is in excess in that community. I think that it's even across the board.
In our little Skepticamp meeting, and Jeff can attest to this because Jeff was there.
Yeah.
It was completely white, except for one black woman, and she wasn't even like black as night. She was like black like you're black.
Yeah. Rihanna black.
Yeah.
Those of you listening.
Rihanna black.
Yeah.
I mean, so in our Skepticamp, completely white, mostly men. We even did a count how there was
2-1, something along those
lines.
Yeah,
it was like 30% women. 30% white women, 70% white men. And if you look at the kind of atheist skeptical torchbearers, you have your basic four. Yeah, you have your Dawkins, your Hitchens, your Harris, your Dennett. James Randi is also white, who's also prominently figured. And we were discussing a little bit about how do we include, or are we doing anything to exclude the black community or the Asian community or the Mexican community? Or
I think that's a good question, but I think that it's really important to remember that assumptions are kind of like the root of all evil, and I think that especially when it comes to skepticism and when it comes to religion, that's kind of where everybody tends to kind of like start off on the wrong foot. And I think that everyone just kind of needs to remember that no matter what color, what race, what creed, that everybody is human, and that every single culture that exists today, it's very similar. And I think that within the black community, I think that everything exists that exists in the white community. It's just that there are certain cultural factors and there are certain social stigmas that permit them from expressing views that they might have on the subject, but it still exists. So I think that you should think of a black person or a Mexican person or a female lesbian or, there's no other lesbian, but you know what I mean. And every single thing as being a white male or a white woman. It's every single person thinks, in my opinion, the same way. Every single person is going to postulate the same information the same way. I think that it's just kind of like, I'm being extremely preposterous, but the white kind of like guilt or kind of like their tendency to just kind of like not really be scared, but just kind of like not want to like jump into certain race categories because they're not very familiar with it. I think that that's kind of like what tends to persuade them or dissuade them from treating everybody else the same way, because they've been raised that way. They've been raised to assume that white is this way, black is this way, Muslim is this way, you know, Mexican is this way. But that's just not the case, especially when it comes to certain like hardcore truths, age-old truths, as does God exist? Is there something that's there?
So I've got a question. Yes. When you talk about something, would you talk about something along the lines of the white perspective, when you talk about us having, I'm sorry, I'm interrupting, but, or I'm sorry,
gaze.
A Western gaze,
as it's been put in this.
But something I can attest to as a white male is that there isn't a lot of sense of community. I don't sense some huge bond with Seth and with Brian and with Mike and with Kai. These are all people who are at the Wild Boar with us. I don't feel that way. But if you were to take a group of Asians or a group of blacks or a group of, you know, whatever, what have you, you would probably get more of a sense of community. Do you think that lack of community within our group has allowed us to be more okay with things like atheism, things like homosexuality, things like really anything that would be that might be considered aberrant in a very specific community, like say Hispanic, or say really any of those?
Yeah, I think it's actually kind of the opposite of what you're postulating. I think that it's the sense that the community within white people is just really effing old. I think that people, that y'all are used to it, you know, and it's been okay for so long. That the word community doesn't even really begin to describe it, because it's just this preconception, basically. And with blacks and with Mexicans and Muslims, it's new, and so we're able to use the term community. And I think that they can kind of be interchangeable. I think that even though you don't feel that it's a sense of community, it's something that's kind of unspoken, because it's like you kind of have this like preconception that it's already okay, and that you're already like, I don't know. I don't really know what word to use here, but
so you're saying something along the lines of that even though I might not see it, Seth and I and Brian and Mike and blah blah are bonded in a way that might not be obvious even to us.
Yes, absolutely. And okay. I think it's just basically because of how you were raised in a sense, and how society works in a sense, especially America.
No, I'm willing to assume that there's something I'm definitely not seeing. So you almost think that it's our excessive level of community that allows us to be aberrant from that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, I don't know if that's just like kind of arrogant and assuming on my part, but I was kind of raised in both. I'm half white and I'm half black, and I grew up knowing that I was half white and half black. I grew up knowing that I was not fully part of the white community and I was not fully part of the black community, so I grew up extremely aware of both. And what I personally have noticed is that the white community, quotations, has this really, really deep-seated sense of togetherness and of just presumption and just organization and long-standingness that kind of out trumps like every single other community that kind of exists right now. And I think that's the entire reason why the word community exists, because it needs to exist for people who aren't white, because it needs to be something right there that says we are a group of people that stand together and then have these ideas and beliefs that aren't white.
So two questions. Allowing that that's a component of white culture, what is it, and assuming that permeates skeptical culture, because there is a preponderance of white people, there is a preponderance of males.
Yeah.
Assuming that is the case, what do you think we could do to combat that?
I think that just completely ignoring that voice inside you that says the other, that long-standing colonial word that is basically the other, that the black community community, in quotations, the Muslim community, Mexican community, Asian community, is a community and not human beings and not exactly like you are, because they are. Because every person I have encountered in my entire life, black, white, whatever, has the same, like, underlying emotion, underlying, like, intellectual processes that I do and that my white friends have. And I think that a lot of society has worked really, 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 really hard to say otherwise, but just it doesn't exist. People are people. People have processes, you know, intellectual processes. People have thought processes that are similar. And I think that whenever you try to approach someone otherwise, I think that you're starting off on the wrong foot. I think that the first thing you need to do is you need to come to someone assuming that they're exactly like you are and that they've thought exactly how you've thought and that they've been through the exact same experiences that you've been through.
So even though there are definite cultural groups that are defined by the group, not necessarily mm-hmm. by us, but groups setting up their own cultural definition.
Yes.
We should pretend is the wrong word, but not work within those definitions.
Ignore it.
Okay.
They're
in order
to cultural
and
social, and I don't think that's where our arguments, our lines of thought, and intellectual lines of thought, and basis for arguments should derive.
So
I think
logical skepticism
separate.
Shouldn't fit within cultural
no.
biases. It
I think they
just
should
be
exactly. I think that you need to basically come from a point as we're all the same, and this is what we think, and this is what the questions we need to ask. And I don't think they should ever differ along any kind of cultural lines. I think that no, that's where everyone differs.
And I've always agreed with that. I'm a big believer in that. It's racism / sexism to pretend that there's some huge difference when
yeah.
when you condescend to someone, you essentially are racist by default.
And it's so deep-seated that it's okay. It's so long-standing that it's okay, but it's not okay. And I think that's where, yeah. Okay, so we're getting
for those of you who aren't aware, we're getting the cut it off signal from our producer Kai.
We gotta go.
No,
this was fun though.
No, that was a lot of fun. I think that's great.
To be continued, I think, definitely.
Oh, absolutely. I think we should have another discussion for sure.
All right. Well, I'm Cassie, and thanks very much.
So we're here with Cassie a few days after getting kicked out of the Wild Boar on Time Grounds.
Yes.
And she's, at this point, had a chance to look at the diversity panel that happened at Skeptic Camp.
The, quote, diversity, unquote, panel.
Yeah, the diversity panel with mostly white people. So we were just going to kind of ask her what she thought about that. Give her a chance to round up some of her thoughts. If you've heard the first part of her interview, she did get cut off mid-sentence. So what did you think? What did you think of the diversity panel?
I don't know if I would really use the term diversity. I understand that for Northern Colorado, maybe it was diverse, but I don't know. I guess I really enjoyed their insights and I enjoy their point of view and I enjoy, you know, listening to them speak. And I thought that they did really good and they made some really valid points. But I don't know if it necessarily touched on some issues that one would think about when they hear the word diversity. And if it was really entirely valid.
So now if you weren't going to handle our panel with kid gloves, what would you say?
No, I think that's what I would say. I mean, I think that it wasn't a diverse panel at all. I think that, yeah, for the most part, they were white. I really like Joel's viewpoint opinion. I think that he'd be great on that panel. But I think that otherwise it didn't really do the job.
So let's say you are now elected queen of our diversity panel. What points would you want to get out there? What questions would you have wanted to hear? And then kind of what would you think of that?
I would have liked to actually hear more of a discussion other than like a Q&A, just because I think that what I see to be a lack of opinions and viewpoints from colored people, we'll go into that later. It just seems that a lot of the questions and a lot of the topics and a lot of what was responded to and just seemed to be kind of coming from a place that was one-sided in a way, I guess. And I think that having an open discussion or an open forum with people from all walks of life, just completely different walks of life, not all just, you know, from this area and from all basically being white, would be really helpful, just because I think it would have maneuvered the questions to really interesting places. And I think that it just questions in general would have surprised people and would have come from somewhere that would have prize the question askers, and I think that it would have evolved naturally and beautifully with the right panel.
You and I talked a little bit about how the perspective of most of the askers seemed to be something along the lines of, how do we attract a more diverse group? How do we attract more women? How do we attract more people of color? How do we attract more what have you?
Okay, so the color thing I'm going to address right now.
Go for it.
On the panel, the word colored and people of color, colored people was used, which is passé. If any of you out there listening have any questions.
Passé is a nice word.
Yeah. Have any reservations for using that word, take heed. It's not really, it's not something that when heard by anybody, it just comes off as kind of negative. So I would never use the word colored.
All right.
Colored people.
Note to our listeners, we're done with colors. Yeah. No more color.
Those were jokes.
Yeah, but there was an awful lot of how do we attract people? Mm-hmm. There wasn't a lot of discussion about the experiences of those people within skepticism. And then there was,
that's true.
I also wanted to ask you about the idea of how do you think skepticism or like a logical frame of mind affects racism, sexism, those of a different bent being involved in it. Is it easier? Is it worse? Is it, what would you say?
Clarify your question. So
do you think, I'll come at this from a different angle. Okay. Do you think that being skeptical, that having a more logical outlook is helpful with,
navigating a white world?
Exactly.
No, not at all. And I think that probably what skeptics encounter is the same thing that black men encounter when applying to a job. It's the same thing that what women encounter when crossing like a construction zone. It's different. It's the other, you know, it's like, it's that old timey thing that we've actually already talked on. It's like, there's just already these like really ancient beliefs that our culture still kind of like has of who should have the power and who is smarter and who should be listened to more. And until those go away, I don't really see any kind of free thought, open forum, non-judgmental society really taking root. I think that it's everyone's problem. I think that we're raised to think that way. And I think that we're going to think that way, even if we feel like we don't, even if we feel like we are completely free of judgment, we are completely, because I'm half black and I judge black people and I judge white people. I'm not going to say I don't, because I do. Once somehow there's a generation that's not raised to see anyone differently, anyone who's not Christian, anyone who's gay, anyone who's like, you know, short, tall, super fat, super athletic differently, then we're all going to have the same issues. And that's why what we talked about earlier, that's why I feel that when you come at a question like, how do we, you know, gain the attention or gain the support of this group of people, that's why I think that it's important to not think of them as an other, not think of them as different, but think of them as just listeners, just viewers, just people that probably have the same viewpoint that I do, and if they don't, how to get them to talk about it.
And before we got started, you and Seth and I were talking about sort of the idea of men versus women and who's more logical. And I just wanted to get your views on tape on that.
So I think that there is something mentioned on the panel. It was to some effect of, are men more skeptical than women, or are men like more apt to be skeptical or something to that effect? I think that it's, I mean, this is a judgment, obviously, but more than likely most people would assume that men are more skeptical. But that's probably because more people think of men as having more freedom of thought, which in a way is just kind of the same thing as men being superior. But I think that, in my opinion, women throughout history have had to hide, for one reason or another, their thoughts and their ideas and their viewpoints. And I think that might have, you know, bred some kind of like skepticism early on that men never had to deal with, because men never had to really check their viewpoints. And that's just what I think. I'm 27. I mean, that view might change in 10 years, but it just seems to me that women have more reason to be skeptical than men, because women have to, I guess, like the same thing about the whole diversity thing. It's like the minority have to fight for more than the majority. So they probably have different views on such things, and they're probably more skeptical to kind of like eat whatever's coming out of the majority, you know, just like to accept the bullshit, accept the norm.
I have an anti-feminist question. Nice. So really, golden. This is the part that people should tune out for if they're going to send letters. Anyways, what I was going to ask was, I've known more than one feminist in my day, and I'm just using that as an example. It could be really any maligned group who then operates from the principle of being so trodden upon that now everything is about that. All of a sudden, I'm anti-feminist because I use the word seminary instead of saying ovulary. And you...
That's fantastic.
It's one of those things. And I actually consider myself very much a feminist in the sense that I'm all about equality, all about equal choice and stuff like that. But as a white male with virtually no minority characteristics, it's hard for me to see that. But sometimes I feel like it galvanizes a viewpoint. You can't think logically because you're working so much from the I'm a feminist, or I am a racial crusader, or I am a GLBT alliance person who is going to push this envelope as far as I can. And it seems to undercut logical thinking in my mind. Am I wrong? What do you think about that? What has your experience been with that?
I think that's an excellent question. And I think that in a way, faux show. In another way, I probably wouldn't use, the word undercutting logical thinking. I don't know if it'd be that extreme. And I think a really good example is my recent summons to jury duty. It was for the grand jury, so they were finding a group of people that would essentially sit on a stage and just kind of pass judgment on prosecutors' evidence and if they can go to trial. They kept asking the potential jurors a bunch of questions to try to figure out if they were, racist or crazy or anything like anything of the sort. And I remember thinking to myself about my experiences when they would ask these questions and thinking about how, I don't really know what word to use, but I guess in a way I would have been kind of like discriminatory in a way. In a way I would have been, I am kind of racist. I am kind of judgmental. And it's because of my experiences. It's because of growing up as a mixed race, half black woman, poor in Texas, no less. And the Texas justice system is
a rope and an oak tree.
It's not favorable to anybody of color, we'll say, because it kind of fits when you're talking about Texas. But anyways, and so I think that I definitely recognized in myself something of what you were talking about, of my past kind of shaping my view, and some of it was negatively. But so I completely see what you're saying. It's like someone from my past would probably look at, one issue differently than someone from like New Jersey or someone from, Canada who grew up in completely different circumstances. But I think that when you go there and when you say, how skewed to the left or skewed to the right, does that make your judgment, or how much does this undercut your logic? I think that you absolutely have to ask the question, what is the right logic? What is the right way to see an issue? Yeah. So it's like, and I think that can be really, really hard.
Yeah, well, when you're talking about like right viewpoints or right logic, and I would just like to clarify that I would think of it as more of a right process. So open mic time. Mm-hmm. What would you want skeptics to know about diversity? Just in your mind, what should we all know?
Leave Northern Colorado. I think that it would be really... No, seriously. One of the first things I noticed when I moved here was the lack of black people.
Can see black people on the map here.
Just being in CSU. And CSU is really diverse just because of how many foreign, international applicants they accept. But I think that it's really important for every single person on the effing planet to travel as much as humanly possible and get those experiences of people who live away from their lifestyle, that live outside of their norm, that are different and that have different experiences and that, would have a different viewpoint just simply because they grew up 100 miles away, 1,000 miles away, 1,500 miles away, and especially people who they already have assumptions about. Not just people who they view as like underprivileged, but people who they view as extremely privileged, people who they view as just anybody that nobody, that you don't know anything about. I think that that's essential to kind of like progression as a civilization is just kind of like throwing away assumptions and being open-minded and talking to other people and seeing how things really are and not just, you know, hearing how things really are and believing it.
All right. So, yeah. So I'll just let you close it up however you want to. Yeah. Until next time.
Thanks, guys.
Here's the leaders in free thought. All right.
We also got a chance to catch up with Jamie Folsom, who was also a member of the panel, which Jeff will get into. You want to say anything about Jamie before we start?
No, I think it's all on the interview. Jamie is an incredibly interesting person who's been a part of our Skeptics in the Pub, actually longer than I have. She's been a part of the Rational Alchemy show here at KRFC in Fort Collins. You can find Rational Alchemy on iTunes, and I do recommend it. But no, a great skeptic, a very interesting person, and someone who was a lot of fun to sit down and talk with.
All right, I'm Jeff, and I'm here with Jamie Folsom. And she's here to discuss how I chastised her, although I think I mocked her. There's a subtle difference over the use of people of color on the diversity panel at Skeptic Camp. She was one of the members of that panel, and she's going to respond to that right now.
Thanks, Jeff. I really appreciate this opportunity. First of all, when people hear the term people of color, there are bound to be people who hear colored, and that was actually never said. Okay. And it wasn't necessarily pointed at different ethnicities, although most of us took it that way. I am a professional. I have worked in the professional world in social work and journalism, teaching for many, many years in diverse situations, and I've lived overseas. And right now, for better or worse, people of color is the best known way to be as neutral as possible. It includes people who consider themselves minorities. We don't have to get into the difference between Latinas and Chicanas. We don't have to get into any sort of political discussion necessarily. So for that reason, the faculty, as I understand it from an Argentinian friend, are referred to as the faculty of color.
Interesting.
And that is a government designation as well, in a way, so I could see where people would have a problem with that.
Well, the government's always been forward-thinking. There's never been a moment where they've been behind the
times.
But
let me tell you, if you are employed by the government, you know that you've had a fair shake, for the most part, in hiring processes for women and quote-unquote minorities, which I don't like to use that term,
okay,
because we're not minorities. And I say we because I am a woman of color. I grew up in a time when colored was used often, and I grew up in the South. And when I was referred to as a colored girl. So I know the difference between colored and people of color, women of color. And it's from the perspective of many of the African-American women that I work with in the AIDS prevention field, women of color is an empowering term.
Okay.
They will not put up with any kind of crap. and they're highly empowered, and that's the term that they prefer to use.
Well, of course, from my perspective, what happened was one person used it, and it turned into sort of a meme on the panel, whether it was positive or negative. Could you see how we had essentially what I'm going to call 1% African-American in the audience? And from my perception, she was not thrilled with the usage of that term. How would you respond to that? Or do you see, here's a better way of saying it. Do you see how that might be slightly offensive to a specifically African-American group?
Yes, like I said before, some people hear the word color and they go straight to colored. Now,
but D's a big deal.
Pardon
ED.
Me?
No, I'm off on a tangent. It's unimportant.
It is a deal, and it's the same as any nuance of phrase. Yes, we've moved past colored.
Mm-hmm.
And let's get on with it. However, there are still, you know, going to be people who will be offended by almost any terminology you use.
Okay.
And so that I consider, and I didn't see her at all, the woman in the audience.
No, and the only reason I noticed is I was moderating the panel and she was literally 3 feet from me. That's right. The only reason I picked up on it.
And so you can't tell when somebody's offended what they're truly offended by.
Of course not.
And some people will misinterpret people's intentions anyway.
Well, and it would
so
be...
It seems to me, and I'm not going to dismiss her reaction.
Uh-huh.
That's her reality. That's, you know, the way she perceived it. There's no way that I can, or anyone can control somebody's, you know, emotional reactions to things. Because we must have pinged her. It was unintentional.
Of course.
We were using professional phraseology. And there's, yeah, you can chastise me about phraseology.
No
now,
one
too,
chastised
Jeff.
You. I sort of rolled my eyes at
you
the phraseology.
Mocked me. You mocked me.
There was no mocking. I gave her the middle finger, which is different, people. It's different. So, no, and it would be totally absurd of me to extrapolate her opinions to the black community in general or something like that. And I definitely take your meaning as I've literally been told that African-American wasn't acceptable, that it was black, and I've been told that black wasn't acceptable, that it was African-American. Since we are talking about the specific term, that I think that would be the group who would be offended by this term. Okay, so let me change the topic just a little bit, because we have about 5 minutes left before you have to run out, and I was wondering if there was anything else you wanted to get in about the diversity panel, because...
Open mic.
Yeah, open mic. I know you had thoughts that weren't expressed on that panel.
Oh, absolutely. First of all, I agree 100% with Cassie, and saying that it could have been moderated more by choosing a set of questions that would have informed the intention of, not as a moderator, but the whole thing set up, so that this panel discussion was focused on the diversity in the skeptic movement. I didn't like the open questioning because it sort of led to places where we got off track.
Uh-huh.
We really could have talked about racial and ethnic diversity in the skeptic movement and what that means, what that looks like. What is the perception of skepticism, and can we look at ourselves in a critical manner, of course, and ask ourselves pertinent questions? Questions that go to the heart of the skeptic movement, rather than some random questions about whatever somebody thought diversity meant.
Okay.
And so we had some spillover from the faith discussion previously, which was too bad.
Yeah. There was a group who was caught on that topic.
Exactly. So I think it could have been moderated differently. It could have been...
The view that the moderator was in any way inept or less than perfect is not one held by this podcast, and in fact, not one held by yours truly.
But it's widely held by the public.
Oh.
Okay, so I really do think we could have tailored the discussion a bit more to why were the panelists chosen? I was asked to come as a parent, which is a really cool thing. And
yeah.
It's not one that you normally think of when you think of diversity. You don't think of ages. You don't think of positions in life. And we sure as heck didn't cover anything that came close to economic diversity, which really truly brings out diversity in ethnicities, experiences, communities of various sorts. That gets at the heart of it. And so I think it would be a great thing to have economic diversity specifically a topic.
Thank you.
was our diversity episode. I hope you enjoyed the little discussion about the controversy.
Anytime two young white guys can bring to you the plight of people outside of the norm in our society, it's great. Two men who fall between 18 and 49, white males, that's perfect.
All right, so that was our bonus episode. Enjoy that. Hope we didn't piss anyone off, but, you know, whatever. Go fuck yourselves.